From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to welcome in Deacon Kevin Staskow. Kevin, you have a new first name. I mean, we just used to know you as Kevin, and now I hear around the building, I keep people, the first word out of their mouth is Deacon. Do your kids call you Deacon?
No, they don't. Don't. I have a friend who was ordained too, and then they call him Deacon Dad to give him a bad time. They're like Deacon Dad all the time.
But I have a friend whose dad became a Catholic priest in his 70s, and he calls him Father. So, Father Dad.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yes. Well, what's it like being, you're 6 months into being ordained?
Yeah, so that's, we were ordained on June 30th. So it's been almost 6 months.
Almost 6 months. You were telling me the last time you were on that this was really transformative for you, that you feel like you're really found what the Lord wants you to be doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me it's been an ever deepening call. Like I was really at one point found myself in my, you know, found myself turning 30 and still being single, and I was working full time for the church. And at that time, the church was really big on this concept of lay ecclesial ministry, that certain lay people are called to, you know, just give their lives, in service to the church. Right. So for me, that was my call, and I was very, you know, solid on that. And I had gone through kind of a grieving process because I figured, well, you know, I'm 30 now, and I haven't really met anyone to marry, and I always, because I came from a large family, I assumed that I would get married and have children, and that hadn't happened yet. So I went through a grieving process to accept the fact that God was calling me to this ministry. And so almost, you know, so I kind of got through that process, and I honestly say I was, you know, really happy just serving the church. You know, I have, my wife and I both have a similar story in that we were both at a young age started working full time for the church, and we've worked full time for the church our entire lives.
Is that something you both imagined, say, as teenagers?
I don't think so. I think that certainly when I was a teenager, I was invited to be do leadership, both at my Catholic school as a campus minister, and then also as a head of a student leader in my youth group. But I don't know if I, you know, it's like I was going to go and be an engineer or be, you know, I had a lot of different things that I wanted to be.
What did you major in college?
My major in college, I went in as a nuclear engineering major at Berkeley.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I was, my dream was to, like, major. I was going to double major. I was really, at that time, I was really into philosophy, too. So I was like, well, I'm going to double major in nuclear engineering and philosophy. And so I just, like, you know, just really, I mean, I loved school. I tell people school is my sport. Like, you know, like I didn't only want to get an A, I wanted to crush everybody else in the class. You know, I wanted to get the A+, right? So that was, you know, and the A+, a lot of times in my, you know, in my experience as a junior high and high school student when I was really into this, was, you know, you had to get to know the teacher really well, right? So you need to give them, you know, not just do the essay, but do the essay that the teacher was actually going to read. Right. You know what I mean? Because I would think back then, you know, the teacher's going to read 35 essays. Like, I want her to remember mine, and I want to get the A+.
Right.
So that was my, you know, my thing. So it was kind of like my sport. So, you know, part of the reason I went to Berkeley is that my high school counselor told me there was no way I would get in. Like, we didn't have enough advanced placement classes at our at our high school because it was a Catholic high school, and we didn't, you know, I wasn't the right race, and I wasn't gonna, you know, there's just no way you're gonna get in, you know. And so I had looked over the criteria to get into Berkeley, and I'm like, well, I've met every single one of these, and I'm number one in my class. So I would think, like, out of anybody at my high school, I should be able to get into Berkeley if I want to go to Berkeley. So that's kind of why I went there, was just to prove this person wrong, right? Like, so that is stupidity, right? Like, I mean, it was no, you know. And then I went there, and I'm like, why am I, you know, like, I just am not, you know. you know, but anyway, I found myself really not called to engineering and really, you know, really enjoying my philosophy classes. And I stumbled upon the Newman Center, mm-hmm. Berkeley, mm-hmm. and I was active there at the Newman Center on the student leader team.
A real active Newman Center.
Yeah. Well, and at that time it was, you know, tiny. I mean, I think we had, you know, 15 or 20 people that came on a mm-hmm. regular basis. Mm-hmm. It's an active Newman Center, but it's kind of like, you know, like the Newman Centers we had here before, where it's right. a parish. It's a right. really active parish. A lot of people come there.
Right.
And because it's in Berkeley, it's kind of a magnet for your, you know, sure. liberal Catholics, sure. you know, what I mean, and very social justice oriented. I mean, right. my goodness, like it was, you know, we were like in, you know, like
Absolutely.
trying to influence, policy on the homeless, trying to, you know, feed the homeless directly, I mean, it was really an incredible experience of here's what the church looks like in action, really trying to change mm-hmm. the culture, the society, and being very politically aware of what's going on around you.
Right.
So you couldn't help but have your eyes open because there was activists of every type there, right? So it was interesting. It was a really good experience for me. But I think what I discovered in there is that, you know, is that call to ministry. And so I was working for a nonprofit theater company outside of, you know, I got this weird call in my senior year, like, hey, we're, you know, it was a theater company that I've been involved in. Like, we do all this theater in the schools now, and we need somebody to be an actor and mm-hmm. we'll pay you. I'm like, oh, paid to be an actor. Like, wow. You know, for a short time in college, I was a theater major, but, you know, I just changed my major a lot. So it was yeah. you know, the thing. And still got out in 3.5 years, or no, 4 years. I got out in 4 years.
Can't
but
do
I could
that
have graduated.
Anymore. Almost impossible.
I could have graduated in 3.5 years. Well, you went in with the AP credit, right? Mm-hmm. So you get, I had almost a whole semester of credit between that and some college classes I'd taken my senior year in calculus. Because my.
Like a community
high
college?
School,
or,
yeah, well, yeah. No, I went to Cal State Hayward at that time,
oh, sure.
mm-hmm. East Bay, because I was at Moreau Catholic High School, mm-hmm. which is right down the hill from
right.
that.
I know the area well.
But anyway, yeah, so you know, so I've always felt that call. So, like, the theater company was, like, going out of business. And so I said, you know, hey, well, do I want to continue working in theater? Or do I want to try, you know, the other thing I do is work for the church. I was working part-time as the youth minister at the Newman Center in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for a full-time job in Castro Valley in the Bay Area, and I got the job.
Is that Diocese of San Jose?
No, Oakland.
Oakland. Okay.
Alameda
yeah.
and Contra Costa County are Oakland.
Or Oakland, okay.
Yeah, so, was,
yeah.
So anyway, so I was a youth minister, and then, you know, then a DRE, then a, you know, RCIA Adult Faith Formation Coordinator. Always had youth ministry and confirmation as part of my job. You know, so like whatever I did, they tacked on, oh, yeah, and you're doing youth ministry and confirmation on top of that.
And then your wife came into your life after you had concluded that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, well, yeah, so I decided, you know, hey, I'm just going to be a lay ecclesial minister. I'm going to be happy to be single. It's going to be fine. You know, God still loves me. I still have value, you know. Went through that whole thing, and then I met Paula. So it was funny because I met Paula, and I, you know, we actually met online. You know, we did, you know, we were both, like, kind of dabbling in online dating because we had, you know, I tell her my attitude was I was horrible at picking people for myself. So let eHarmony or whatever, yeah. you know, whatever electronic algorithm must be better at picking people for me, because I picked some pretty bad people for me. You know, I ended up in some pretty bad relationships. So, you know, I thought that would be the best way to do it. And then we both kind of avoided saying we worked for the church in our profiles because we were like, we were both looking to, you know, we had dated a lot of people in the church or in the parish and it had all gone bad. So it was like, let's try to meet somebody, you know, maybe outside of the you know, usual suspects. And Paula's maiden name is Spackman. So her username or her handle on the site was Ms. Pac-Man, and so I assumed she was a classic gamer, and I was really at the time into collecting old video games and whatever, and so I originally contacted her because I liked her picture, and I thought she was into classic games, and it turns out she was a youth minister in the Catholic Church, like, randomly,
God's
right?
God's little joke.
Like, so that was God's little joke, like, you know, okay. And so we were both youth ministers, and I took a job. When we were dating, I took a job over closer to her because I was sick of using, you know, the San Mateo Bridge. I had every time I went to see her, had to drive across San Mateo Bridge. So I took a job at St. Pius in Redwood City, and mm-hmm. she was at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Redwood City, and that was a great time. Like
now, that is during while we were engaged. Jose, is that right?
No, that's still San Francisco. That's the Archdiocese of San Francisco. So
okay,
San Francisco. All the way down the peninsula? So it goes. The diocese in California, you may or may not know this, go by the counties.
Right.
So
yeah,
in the Bay Area, Oakland is Alameda and Contra Costa County.
And we're 20 counties.
Yeah, we have 20 counties, right? But we actually, I mean, our boundary is the
is
same.
Is the counties.
Is the county line.
Exactly.
So we don't cut the counties in half.
Right.
So in the Bay Area, the Diocese of San Francisco is Marin County, San Francisco County, which is just the city of San Francisco, and San Mateo County.
And San Mateo.
But San Mateo County goes all the way from San Francisco all the way down to what's south of Redwood City?
Palo Alto.
Where's the seminary in
in
Menlo Park.
Menlo Park.
So like Menlo Park, I think is it. Oh, you know, I don't even know if it's still.
Yeah.
It's pretty close to being in San Jose.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Diocese of San Jose is just Santa Clara County. It's just one.
Oh, it's just
county,
one
county. Okay. It's kind of like Orange. Orange is the county of Orange.
Yeah.
And San Jose is Santa Clara County. That's it.
Whereas then, Los Angeles actually has what, Santa Barbara County?
Yeah. So they would have. Yeah. They would have Santa Barbara County. Yeah. Los Angeles County, which is huge,
yeah,
and I don't know what else. There's a couple more they probably.
I believe
have.
They even have a auxiliary bishop in residence in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, and so they have like multiple auxiliaries, and they have like their own little offices.
Yeah.
So like they have like regional offices. Yeah. We've talked about that. Like we have our North State, and we've talked about having North State offices, and we haven't done that. I think that the feeling is that. We don't want to separate the pastoral center.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were doing that model, you know, you might have the auxiliary bishop in Reading with his own staff that serve that area. That's kind of how Los Angeles does it.
Right.
Very like they put the person who's in the Santa Barbara region is Bishop Barron.
Oh, really?
And they put him there because, I don't know, I heard that they put him there because there's not as much going on there and he can work on his...
Do all the things he does.
You know, he does all that evangelization and the speaking and all that great work that he's doing
really
online and on video and all that. So they wanted him to have the ability to
do
that.
His Catholicism series was just fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so anyway, then I met Paula and we got married. And so there was that call to like, well, maybe I'm called to get married. Maybe this is, you know, whatever. And then I just had random people that I really respect pull me aside and say, hey, have you thought about being a deacon? I think you'd make a really good deacon. And I thought about it at certain points, but I also had experience of talking to some deacons' wives in the Oakland Diocese who didn't really, you know, who really like had a bad experience in the process of becoming a deacon. And then when their husband became a deacon, then they didn't, you know. And so I'm like, I would never put a woman through that. Why would I put my wife through? You have to go through all this formation, but then you're not ordained and I get ordained and you just get to support me.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of felt like, well, I don't know if somebody would want that. So I didn't really think Paula would like that. But when I talked to Paula about it, she was like, I think it'd be great to be a deacon's wife. I'm all over that. I'm like, okay. You know, part of our discernment was that as a lay person, there isn't really a structure of support. So there's not like – there's nobody saying, you know, hey, you need to get spiritual direction or we have a small group for you or let me advocate for you on behalf of the lay people. Lay people are kind of like – they're still treated in many ways in the church as kind of independent contractors, which is – it's positive. And we're not independent contractors. We're definitely employees, but we're kind of on our own. You know, you're not associated with an order or officially associated with the diocese. You're just kind of like, you know, you can kind of do what you want. So there's some freedom in that. But there's also a lack of kind of support. So part of the attraction to the diaconate for Paula was she thought that we as a couple would have a lot more support, find a lot more support in our ministry from the other deacon couples, you know, because they get together regularly for formation. And Paula and I also had a desire to really be formed together. And I think for me, and I'm sure I've said this on this program before, my feeling always has been like as soon as I started getting involved in the church, I kept getting elevated to levels of authority and administration. And I saw myself, I kind of had this vision of myself at the end of my life standing in front of the pearly gates and, you know, am I going to get in or not, right? You know, and you know, the question is asked, you know, did you feed me? Did you
Matthew
clothe
25.
Me? Did you whatever? And so then I would say, Jesus or, you know, St. Peter, whoever's there. I started this program at the diocese and it trained 50 youth ministers, right. And they recruited, 1,000 volunteers, right. And they served a bunch of poor people.
Right.
Does that count?
Does that count?
And there's a piece of me that has been saying, like, well, no, that's not really what he said. And I think that I'm not saying that my work is not doesn't have an apostolic character to it. Doesn't have an influence and isn't serving. I like to think that what we're doing here to try to train youth ministers and connect young people to Jesus is effective in some level and does stuff. But on the other hand, I'm not really getting my hands dirty. So the exciting thing to me about the diaconate is that the deacon serves at the table of the Lord during Mass only because he serves at the table of the poor during the week. And so the reason that the deacon has the rightful place at the altar is because the deacon is bringing that witness of the poor, the marginalized, to the altar. So the deacon is the church's service sacramentalized, and that idea that, we have to have that integrated life as a deacon. So you're committing to not only works of charity, but, to be on the altar and then also to be a minister of the word. Catechizing, giving homilies, proclaiming the gospel. And the idea is I'm up there proclaiming the gospel because I'm serving the poor. And I'm bringing that witness to the altar to say, like, well, hey, even if you're married and even if you have kids and if you have a busy job or whatever, you can still serve the poor. Look, and I'm an example of that. Or you can still do, service to the church, and that's what we're called to do. And so by my example, And so that's what part of the thing that I really like about the diaconate is there's an accountability now to my discipleship that I think every layperson is supposed to be doing.
But
there's kind of that whole idea of like, and then I felt a strong feeling during the ordination of God saying, this is, just a strong feeling of being like, oh, this is where I've been called my whole life. This is it. This is where I'm supposed to be. And that's come up several times. Like, I was very nervous about serving at Mass because I've been around Mass a lot, but then actually being up there and am I going to do it right? And, am I going to make a mistake and, whatever. And I've just felt like an incredible grace and calm up there. Like, this is exactly what you're supposed to be. Just serve me. Just serve me however you're going to serve me, So that's the then I was also assigned by the bishop to a parish where I didn't start at. So I was a parishioner of St. Clair, and my wife worked there, and it was all going to be great. And then the bishop assigned me at St. Lawrence. So now I'm getting used to that. So that's been interesting. And it's that whole idea that, well, this really isn't my ministry. I'm an extension of the bishop's ministry. The bishop wants me here. I'm gonna figure it out. So it's been good. And to be able to help there. And right now I'm just trying to get to know the parish, and when you start at a new parish, I really feel for these priests that get moved a lot because it's just a lot of work to even, and I work here. I have a pretty demanding job here at the diocese, so it's not like I have the time. If I was full time at the parish, it would be different.
Sure.
So it's just, trying to get to know people on a part-time basis is difficult, as a deacon.
So I think many people don't realize the great amount of formation, time-wise and otherwise, to become a deacon. You don't just take a few classes and you're ordained.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty evolved.
It's what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, our process was 4.5 years. The current process is, I believe, 4 years. It's a year of discernment and then 3 years of formation. There's also, it takes about a year to apply because, like, the guys in this, we didn't have to do this, but the guys in this class, they had to show some, they either had to take a class in Spanish for like the 9 months before they started, or they had to prove some competency in Spanish. They also had to be certified as basic catechists before they went in. So there's some prerequisites. They do interviews, psychological evaluation. There's all this. It's really hard to, like, there's a long process to get in. And then once you're in, you have a year where you're just, you know, getting into the routine of prayer, of the liturgy of the hours, and working with your spiritual director and kind of discerning and coming to an understanding of like the theology of the diaconate. What is a diaconate? What is it? You know, why would you want to be part of it? And then discerning whether, you know, is this really my call?
Right.
You know, or really our call as a couple in many ways. You know, the wife isn't ordained, but the wife has to assent to each of the rites, you know, send a letter, actually physically write a letter to the bishop in their own handwriting every single time, giving permission for their husband to go through the next stage of the diaconate.
And virtually all the deacons are married?
Yes, virtually every single one. And you can become a deacon if you're single, but you make a vow of celibacy. So if you're ordained a deacon as a single person, then you can never get married.
Right.
And then if you're married and you're ordained a deacon and your wife dies, then you assent to being celibate.
Right.
And so that's a, you know, that's another thing that you have to, you know, discern. That's part of the discernment.
Wow. It's quite a process.
And then, you know, to realize that this is just to be a volunteer, right?
Yeah. Right.
Deacons in general are not paid. I mean, right. I'm paid by the church, but in a different job. Deacon work is unpaid.
Right.
You know, and so that's the other issue, too, is to realize that it's not for the money or, you know what I mean? It's it's been said many times, like, you know, there's nothing that I can do that a lay person can't be delegated to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bishop can delegate a lay person to do a baptism.
Sure.
Can delegate a lay person or a religious sister or brother to witness at a wedding. You know, so all the things, you know, a lay person can do a funeral vigil. You know, so everything that a deacon can do, really, and a lay person can be delegated to do. It's just that I would be like an ordinary minister of those sacraments, and you would be an extraordinary. So I'm an ordinary ministry of communion, but you would be an extraordinary minister of communion. But it doesn't mean that you couldn't do it. So it's not like you're, you know what I mean? So it really is, I think it's a true call because there's not, I mean, the advantages of it are not very clear. I mean, it's as a lay person, especially in the modern church, you can do most of what a deacon does, besides preach.
4 or 5 months into it now. Is it what you expected? And do you feel pulled in a lot of directions?
I don't think it's expected. It's what I expected at all. I mean, it's completely different. So that's the other thing too, is that, thank goodness that, I mean, I think I'm most thankful for the diaconate formation process, because they insisted that you have a routine of prayer and they worked really hard on your spiritual life as far as spiritual direction and having a routine of prayer, because that's what kind of sustains you. You realize that you really can't do anything or you can't do effective ministry without making Jesus at the center of everything you do, and to realize that it's Jesus's ministry, not yours. And the minute you start thinking it's my ministry is where you kind of start to fail, because you bring your ego into it and whatever. The diaconate is a radical, emptying of oneself. It's that whole thing of like, I must decrease so you can increase with Christ, right? So it's brought that dimension into my ministry. And that dimension should have been in my ministry as a lay minister.
Should be in all of them.
But the 4 years of formation of the diaconate really kind of, you know, just hits that home. And you start to realize like, wow, I some of this ministry I did. And, you know, I think people in my life that are close to me, you know, have said, you know, wow, your attitude is different about ministry now. And I think it really is. I have a different understanding, a different reality. Part of that, I think, really is the grace of the sacrament. I believe that I received grace from the sacrament that I didn't have before. And then part of that is just a realization through that diaconate process of being accountable to a spiritual life and a spiritual practice, and that continuing in my diaconate that really sustains me. And I also feel like there's a lot that you go through all that formation and everything, and then, you know, I wonder if it sticks, but then somebody comes up and talks to me and stuff comes out of my mouth and I'm like, well, I guess it stuck, or the Holy Spirit is speaking directly through me, 'cause I don't know where that came from. Came from somewhere in my formation, but it's not really a conscious thing necessarily.
Wow. So you're one of the rare people that can touch all the sacraments.
Well, that's what I was saying. My daughters were super excited that my my dad received all seven sacraments, and they had one of their faith formation, one of their school, the teacher, the religion teacher in the school, they go to Catholic school, like was saying, that's not true, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, you know, because she didn't realize that deacons were ordained.
Yeah, so, I think so many people don't realize.
So I had to do was to go in for a surgery, and I was anointed with anointing of the sick. So I've actually received all seven sacraments, and my kids have known that. And so they thought that was the coolest thing ever. Like, my dad's received all seven sacraments.
Yeah, not only.
They were telling our pastor, like, my dad's received more sacraments than you. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, so most people who have
like
been
more than the bishop. Yeah. I have more sacraments than the bishop.
Most people have been ordained or haven't, you know, received the sacrament of matrimony. And most people who are healthy like you are have not been received the last rites, so you're
well.
You're,
and it isn't the last. It isn't really the last.
Well,
rites,
not
the
really.
So I mean, the sacrament of the sick, and you can receive. I mean, people call it the last rites, but you can receive the sacrament of the sick many times.
Sure.
So anytime that you're going in for a surgery, you can receive that sacrament. You know, if there's a grave illness, you can receive it. So people receive it several times in their lives, but I have received it. So I've received all, and then my kids were like super excited. You've received all seven sacraments.
Was it hard going through the diaconate training with two young daughters?
I think it's harder, but I think it's also like a self-discernment process. We were talking about that when they reestablished the diaconate, it was reestablished during Vatican II. They had the ordination age at 35 or 40, and then during the an amendment was added to lower the age. So I think you can be ordained at 30. It's either 30 or 35. I can't remember which, but they did it purposely because they wanted younger deacons. Mm-hmm. And so I really do think that some dioceses have limited deacons to people that have grown children or don't have children in the home. But I just think that, you know, that wasn't really the spirit of the diaconate. And I feel like it's a kind of a self-discernment process. It's like everything else. Like if your family is if you can't handle the, you know what I mean, if you can't balance the stuff, you're not going to be able to balance it as a deacon either. So you end up, you know, kind of discerning out. So I think they could, I think, do some things. And, you know, I've talked to Uli here who forms the deacons. I think they could do some stuff to make it a little bit more family friendly, include the children. I think that it's really a family affair. The whole family
child care will be provided.
or provide some formation for them at the same time.
Sure.
Or, you know, there might be some option. There might be some option for including them in the formation process, or help. You know, maybe, you know, helping them to understand the diaconate in more of a formal way. And I think, you know, they could do that. I know that. From what I read about Germany, in Germany, the children are involved in, like, the whole entire process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the family goes together on the deacon weekends. And, you know, the formation is pretty – I mean, here in the Diocese of Sacramento, formation is pretty intense. We do, like, 8 or 9 online classes a year, and then there's 6 weekends a year and a retreat. You have to go to spiritual direction every month. You have to meet with your deacon mentor every month. You have a small group meeting every month. You have every month you have to serve the poor a certain number of hours. There's like 8 to 10 hours you do a project. We also have a ministry project every year, and you have to put in a certain number of hours per month on that ministry project. Well, there's papers to write on top of all of that. I mean, it's kind of death by a thousand cuts. Like there's a lot of things, you know, and so it's not each individual thing is not hard, but when you put them all together and you're trying to schedule those in a given month in the midst of an active family life and a demanding job, it's not easy.
Yeah.
It certainly was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was like, oh, you know, it won't be a problem. It was just the constantly scheduling, and something comes up with your kids, so you got to reschedule your spiritual direction meeting.
Sure.
And then when do you do it? When am I going to fit this in? I don't know. You know, and then even though I worked for the church, it was like I still had to do my job. I couldn't just go, I have to write a paper today. I'm not coming to work. I
mean, exactly.
Just like anything. So I think it would be equivalent to having a full-time job, having a family, and being in school full-time.
Yeah.
Or more than full-time. I mean, that's what it is. And I think it was a punishing schedule for a lot of people. Really was.
Do you have a... You don't have much of a turnover rate, though, right? I mean, people that decide not to become...
Well, we had almost... How many do we have start? I think we had over 40 that started, and then 27 finished. So
okay,
about a third, third dropped out. I mean, I think over the over the course of the
now you don't have thing, first year, second year, third year, and 4 year. You just have a class, and they go all the way through.
So you have a class that goes together. So they've been doing it every 2 years, and they've been doing an English class, then a Spanish class. Now they're putting everybody through the same program, and some of the classes are in Spanish for the Spanish speaking, but the English speaking have to be have a certain level of Spanish. They want the deacons who are ordained to be able to serve a mass and other sacraments in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So be able to read it well, be able to prepare like a simple homily, be able to be able to carry on a conversation, to set I imagine the expectation would be I'd be able to sit down with you and help you prepare your, in Spanish, be able to sit down and help you prepare the readings or whatever for your wedding or whatever, So a basic level, to be able to, basically, and a deacon doesn't say a lot, but if you read the gospel and didn't do the homily, you'd just be able to read the gospel and you have three or four lines, in mass, then you can participate. But that idea of you being able to know enough Spanish to competently serve mass.
Did you have to take Spanish as well?
We didn't have to do that.
Yeah,
just the new class. Yeah. But now I'm in a parish that's mostly Spanish speaking, so I should have.
You should have. Yeah,
so I'm learning. So,
wow, there's a lot involved.
Well, and I also think it's the there's a lot of people that are so concerned about the lack of vocation, but I don't see a lack of vocation in the church at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number of people that are called to work full time for the church, and actually go to school and get master's degrees. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in our church that are willing to be deacons. There's a lot of people that are, that are getting married. You know what I mean? Against all odds in our culture, right?
Yeah.
Nobody gets married anymore, right? But we still have a lot of young people, especially the young adults that are active in their faith. I've watched in my last 10 years many of them get married. You know what I mean? So I think there's a lot of people committing to discerning what God is calling them to do and responding, in faith, to a vocation and serving the church. So, to be honest, it's really important that there be, that we have enough priests, but it's also really important that we have lay people to run all the ministries, and it's really important that we have deacons to do some of the service work that priests don't have time for, and we all work together. So the Holy Spirit is active in promoting vocations. But I think a lot of times we get into that mindset of, when I say I'm praying for vocations, I only care if there's priests.
Yeah, you're right.
And I ignore the fact that, look, so I may be sad because we haven't had a priest come forward in our parish in the last 10 years. Anybody come forward to as a vocation or go into the seminary. But if I look around, how many have gotten married? How many people have, committed to like hundreds of hours to ministry?
Right.
How many people have, are there deacons? Are there religious sisters? There's a lot of other vocations that are happening. And so I think we need to be thankful for the vocations we get instead of always hanging down our heads and saying we just don't have enough priests.
Right.
And I do think we could always use more, but I also think that by our baptism, we're called to serve as well, and there's a lot of different ways to serve.
Indeed, we're with Deacon Kevin Descow. So, has it affected your job here?
No, except everyone calls me Deacon Kevin. They ask me to pray a lot more.
I hear they call you Deacon Kevin even when you're not in our presence. Somebody says, Kevin.
I was told by one of my deacon mentor was Deacon Lou Delgadio from St. Mary's here in Sacramento. And, he impressed upon me my role because I work full-time at the diocese, I have an important role in kind of promoting the vocation of the diaconate to others. And part of that is being deacon, being called deacon, and insisting on being called deacon because you are, and people need to know that that's a thing, and
it's
a special thing. It's important, and it helps people, you know, to know, like, oh yeah, I know Kevin and he's a deacon now. Wow. You know, it's, you know, it right. would help people, to help discern their call and also to realize that,
right.
you know, this is what it is. And I think the diaconate among the, you know, look at priest, bishop, deacon, you know, the ordained ministries right. is the most misunderstood and needs to be clarified. You
know, I know
minds.
People though, aren't they lay ministers? Aren't they?
Yeah.
They don't know that you're ordained.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the theologians on the diaconate talks about the deacons being one arm. The presbyterate is one arm of the bishop, and the diaconate is the other arm of the bishop. You know, and also when I understand when a bishop is ordained, they have to wear all of the garments. So they wear the alb and the, mm-hmm. and then they wear the dalmatic of the deacon and then the chasuble of the priest and then the, you know, whatever other garment. So because it's a part of their ordination. And every priest, you know, maybe people don't know this, but every priest gets ordained a deacon before they become a priest.
Right.
A transitional deacon, but the diaconate is part of their priestly ordination as well.
Right.
So
is that usually their final year before they're ordained?
They do. They get ordained, and then they have another year.
Yeah.
They get ordained a deacon, then they have one more year formation, and then they become a priest.
Wow.
So we have three of our seminarians. Or, I mean, there's three people in our in formation right now that have already been ordained deacons, and they're mm-hmm. on their way to becoming priests.
Wow.
In their last year.
So, youth and young adult ministry. Anything you want to tell us about? We're having a virtual World Youth Day.
We're having a virtual World Youth Day in January. Check out the website to find out more information on that. It's going to be an overnight, one night overnight. If you want to stay another day overnight, you can make it a longer weekend.
Mm-hmm. That'll be at Trinity Pines up in Colfax.
Trinity Pines up in Colfax. We have Vince Nims, who's been doing retreats like this for many years. He's really talented. We also have the AMPT group, mm-hmm. the
from
youth
St. Clair.
Group from St. Clair in Roseville. We'll be having some live stream from the actual event, including Bishop Soto, mm-hmm. who will be in Panama, talking to us live and greeting the participants. And we're hoping that people from other dioceses are also welcome to come to that. Mm-hmm. It's on the weekend of World Youth Day, I believe. It's
so the 26th and 7th.
Yeah, 26th
of January.
26th and 27th of January. We also have coming up really quick is our Youth and Young Adult Ministers Retreat with Father Matthew Spencer. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent presenter. It'll be a really good day to just take some time away and pray. And that's happening at Trinity Pines Center in Colfax on Saturday, the 15th of December. I think starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. And anybody who's involved in youth and young adult ministry as a leader is welcome to come to that. We have our Posada Juvenil, which is happening at St. Rose Parish. That's on Friday, the 21st, or is it, wait, Monday? No, Friday the 21st of December. And that is a opportunity. It's a Hispanic tradition following Joseph and Mary as they mm-hmm. try to find lodging. And I understand it involves a big party at the end with hot chocolate, piñatas, and other
stuff.
Did
they know it would be cheaper if they did it online, the lodging?
That's right. They didn't have Airbnbs back then. They were the first. Well, that'd be a
they
good
the
ad
first.
Campaign. That was the first Airbnb. It was a stable in Bethlehem.
It's a B&B. One of those B's stand for barn.
Yeah. And then we also have a leadership. There's an opportunity for leadership training over Christmas break, 27th through the 29th of mm-hmm. December up at Trinity Pines. And so if you go on the website, scd.org/OYYA, O-Y-Y-A,
oh, yeah,
Office
sure.
of Youth and Young Adult Ministry. Right. So it's OYYA. So scd.org/OYYA. You can find out about our leadership training. There's still room in that. That's for teens who'd like to learn to be leaders in their youth group and in their parish. And so it's talking about what are the qualities of a Christian leader, how to discern whether you're really called to leadership, and then giving them some practical skills, how to plan and lead prayer, how to facilitate a small group, how to give a talk, how to witness to somebody, some practical skills in leadership and ministry for teens. low-cost thing to do over the Christmas break. So you can also, if you want to find more information, you can call Jennifer Campbell, 916-733-0135.
Very good. Very good. Kevin, blessings on your family. And
okay, thank you.
We will see you soon.
Okay, see you soon. Thanks for having me.
Deacon Kevin Staskow. And call him Deacon. Appreciate it very much. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Thanks, John, and thanks, Sheriff. Had the great pleasure of seeing the sheriff as the keynote speaker for the Bishop of Gagos Maternity Home dinner back the second Sunday of September, and what a bang-up job he did. And it's great we have people like that around, and he's a fellow talk show host as well. Does a great show at 3 o'clock. I think it's still 3 o'clock on KFBK. It's great to have folks like Sheriff McGinnis around. Real strong pro-life message. That was a couple months ago, but I still remember it.
Yeah,
brought down the house.
John's a good guy.
Yeah, you know, back there was, you know, we've had some issues, you know, and with police and protests and et cetera. And John was one of the people that came in here, brought in people from diverse backgrounds, including law enforcement and members of various communities in town, and they all prayed the rosary together. Bishop Cotta was part of that as well.
I think wasn't John Watkins as well?
I think John Watkins set it all up, and it was just fabulous. You know, to have the former sheriff of Sacramento County and some other wonderful people, and Bishop Cotta, of course, who's now the bishop of Stockton, the Diocese of Stockton, just praying the rosary. And you go, I'm sure if people are tuning in, they're going, that sounds like Sheriff McGinnis.
Right. That's one of the things I find. So over the many years of being here now, I think it's about 12 years I've been producing your show with you. I think that one of the things I find interesting is people who are outside the Catholic Church, they just think, a lot of them think of the church as just a religion, and there's people that belong to it, like other religions and what have you. But if you think about the social, you think of the social justice and the amount of work that's done in the community that's organized by different, you know, factions and right. ministries of the church, right. it's astounding.
Oh, it is. It's
amazing.
Occasionally somebody will say, oh, you're Catholic, I get mine. They come up with this litany of of crimes.
Right. I mean, just complaints.
I don't mean crimes, but complaints.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that stuff or whatever. Or I grew up Catholic and they're mad about something. You know, somebody said something to them. Anyway, I say, okay, let's just imagine the church never existed.
Right.
Let's just take Northern California. Let's take the 20 counties of the Diocese of Sacramento. No Catholic Church. Didn't exist. Do you know how many people would be hungry, would be down and out with nobody to help them?
Dead.
Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, dead. Yeah.
Prematurely
dead.
Exactly. Dead. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean.
You know, you go, wait a minute. The state takes care of everybody. No, they don't.
They don't.
You know, look at all the work the Knights of Columbus do. Look at all the work the St. Vincent de Paul Society does. And I know I'm leaving out 400 other organizations.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the two that come to mind. And then look at the church, the work the institutional church does.
Mm-hmm.
John Watkins, the head of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. They've been all over the fire up in Paradise.
Right.
How are we going to find housing for people? How can we help? How can we help organize? The Catholic Schools Department saying, we'll take any kid
who's
been impacted
that's,
by the
that's
fire.
That's so beautiful.
We don't care if they're living in Red Bluff or Sacramento or Vallejo, or come to Catholic schools for the whole year, no tuition, no nothing.
Yeah.
We'll take care of you. We'll give you a uniform, backpack, whatever you need. We're, no questions asked.
Right.
Whether you're Catholic, you're not Catholic, whatever. You know, you've really been displaced.
Right.
But the ongoing programs. I know during the annual Catholic appeal, you look at the various things that it's going to go to.
It's amazing.
Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. They're now the food provider, distributor to all the other outlets in all of Sacramento County.
Yeah.
How did they get picked to do that? Because they do such a great job.
Right. Sacramento Life Center.
Sacramento Life Center.
Yeah.
And you founded by Catholics.
Right.
On and on and on and on. You go through it and you just say, okay, one day the church just, all our Catholic schools, one day the church just disappears,
right.
does not exist. Well, you'd have about, 20,000-30,000 kids showing up for school at the public school on Monday morning saying, "Oh, we don't have room for you. we were counting on the church to educate you." People, and then you think about immigration,
right?
And people being provided with citizenship help. How do you become a citizen? With language, English language. Teaching people the language
And vocations too.
And vocations.
I mean, teaching them not just vocations for the church, like to become a priest, but people teaching people who have come over here and have worked hard to become a citizen. Well, that's step one. Like now, you got to get yourself into the workforce. And there's vocational training. There's things they do, all kinds of stuff.
And then Sister Libby riding around on her bicycle,
right in the middle of these neighborhoods, people won't walk through.
The people won't walk through.
Yeah.
And
she's giving people coffee.
Homeless, you know, Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services and all these other groups say, okay, you're homeless and you need a job. Well, you need some clothes,
right?
You need a shave. You need a haircut.
Do you know how to tie a tie?
You can't go in there like this. You're not going to get the job. You know?
Speaking of Catholic schools, it was funny because I actually had somebody had made some sort of comment, somebody who doesn't like the church, to me about working here, and they said something about like, oh, they're so anti knowledge and whatever. They just want people to believe stuff from 2,000 years ago. And I was like, if they're anti-knowledge, what's with all those Catholic schools right now?
Exactly.
What's with the Vatican has its own observatory to observe the planets and the skies so they can learn about, you know, space.
Exactly.
And they're like, I think, you know, there's so many antiquated arguments against any religion, really.
Yeah.
And just that, you know, Catholic has to be the oldest.
So much of education way back when came from the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
You know, so much of scientific inquiry and discovery came from the Catholic Church.
You hear people quote Thomas Aquinas or people like that, like, all the time.
All the time.
And they don't realize, what they're doing. Oh, he was this great philosopher. Well, but also you know,
Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
or St. Augustine. And, and on and on and on.
Right.
You know, it's mind-boggling. And then you look at people like Maximilian Kolbe, Mother Teresa, and the kind
Chesterton.
Chesterton.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling the contributions. And then you know, the obvious, the St. John Paul II and Pope Benedict and Pope Francis. And
artists, too. I mean, when Jim McCormick comes in, he's always playing these amazing classical works. And it's like, this was
They're always Catholic.
Right, yeah. This was a priest or a Catholic or, a monk or whomever. And it's like...
And most of the music was for the church.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It is mind-boggling to think of all the ways the church has contributed to society, to making it just and just the moral presence. I mean, you know, leave all the physical stuff out. The moral presence of the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teaching our kids right from wrong and setting an example and et cetera. We've failed many times. There's no question. And what's going on now is very troubling.
Right.
Know? But there are a lot of good people who are trying to turn that around.
I mean, not that it excuses anything, but tell me one organization that's been around as long as the church has been around that has as many members as the church has had around, and it doesn't have a few people messing it up here and there every so often. But you think about the outweighing, and obviously one indiscretion like this is too many.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
If you think about the numbers of people that are helped and the numbers of people that aren't harmed and the numbers of people that have had, you know, amazing life-changing experiences as compared to the ones who haven't, statistically, it's very small.
One.
But again, one is too many.
Yeah,
one is too many. And those people need to get rooted out, and they are getting rooted out. So that's that. The problem is being taken care of, but that should never refract from the actual good that the church is doing and things that are going on. This whole conversation started because I wanted to point out that when all of that was going on with the with different minorities in the city and the police and things like that, John McGinnis and, you know, John Watkins were the first ones to say, "Hey, let's do something.
Let's do something."
And to the people's credit who were supposedly on the other side of the police, they were like, "Yes, let's do something.
Let's do it."
And that was just, I thought that was just an amazing thing because it's like,
they were all in this little studio,
this tiny room,
around this little table, very crowded, and everybody praying a rosary.
Yeah, I mean, it's crowded with you and I in here, so it was like six people in here.
Yeah. So, no, it's amazing. And I know when Lincoln Snyder, the director of Catholic schools, came in a week or two ago and said, "Here's what we're going to do for for you know, the schools, people displaced in Paradise and other places up in Butte County. It just, I got tears in my eyes. It made me very proud to be Catholic.
Yeah, I got the email from them that they wanted to come on, and I read it, and then I went and spoke to Yasmin, who's in charge of pretty much, she's sort of the gatekeeper over there.
Right.
You know, she's one of those people who, like, knows everything. Yeah. And I asked her, and I was like, am I reading this correctly?
Yeah.
She says, yeah. And I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a real statement.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's I know when the fire in Weed and then in Santa Rosa and then, you know, in Butte County and Redding, we've had two horrendous fires right here. I mean, well, mm-hmm. Weed is in the diocese too, and obviously that was very destructive, but it wasn't the scope of Redding or Paradise.
Nothing is, really.
Nothing's the scope of Paradise.
Nothing.
Even the Santa Rosa fire.
Malibu came close.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, nothing has been the scope. It's the largest fire in California history, they say.
In history.
Yeah.
Yeah, period.
So, I mean, that's just, I mean, it's the devastation beyond devastation.
Yeah. It's the kind of stuff you just don't imagine is gonna happen, and yet... And many, many good people of all faiths and of no faith are up there trying to help.
Right.
But it's been very instructive that people like John Watkins that just puts on his boots and jumps in.
I think tomorrow I'm going to replay our show with John and with, I forget who else we had on the same show. Oh, it was Lincoln. It was a show with Lincoln. And then John came on afterward where they talked about the disaster relief so people can know what they're doing and what they can do to help.
I mean, because there's, you know, there's this term, and I think in relief agencies, they call it relief fatigue or something like that.
Right.
Where people, okay, we heard about Katrina, we wrote a check, and here you are 10 years later, and people are still suffering the effects of Hurricane Katrina. You know, and
but imagine how bad it would be if you didn't write that check.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's going to take years,
right,
for Paradise. I mean, I heaven knows if there will ever be a city of Paradise again.
No, it might not.
You know,
because I mean, once the rains come and then the mudslides and everything comes through, I mean, there's a lot more problems than just dead trees and no houses
in Durham.
Yeah.
Just, you know, we hadn't had rain for months, and the rain comes in Durham, which you know was affected by the fire. Mm-hmm. And here's, I saw the one lady on TV and she's crying and she says, it's been a tough few weeks for our county.
Yeah.
There was
a lady who I saw on TV who had they had like a hunting cabin up in Tahoe, and that's where they live now. And mm-hmm. she's just like, this is our home now. I mean, we live here. Our kids are going to go to school up here, and this is, we don't have a home to go back to.
And now we're hearing about, you know, rents and housing prices in Chico just soaring.
Right. Of course.
You know,
it's
so disturbing.
It is disturbing. And, you know, what the schools are doing is giving these kids a chance. I mean, it's great and wonderful. I donated a bunch of clothes and stuff mm-hmm. to it, and that's all great. But sooner or later, people need infrastructure. They need schools. They need homes.
Kids,
so,
I mean, you look at everything's been wiped out. And I was reading about it. It was one of the basketball teams or the football team or something from Paradise High School, and every kid except one, their home was destroyed. So, yeah, it's remarkable, everything that's been going on. Well, that's going to do it for us for today. God bless. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain. Falls. I'll raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away.